Please stand by. We're about to begin. Good day, everyone, and welcome to the IBM DB2 Performance Making the End Run Successful conference call. Today's call is being recorded. For opening remarks and introductions, I would like to turn the call over to Ms. Diane McCallum. Please go ahead.
Welcome, everybody, to DB2 Performance Making the End Run Successful. My name is Diane McCallum, and I am the worldwide sales leader for IBM's DB2 for Z and DB2 and IMS tools. I will be your host today. Our first speaker, you may already know, he is Ernie Mansell of IBM, a certified consulting software specialist, and is a member of the America's DB2 Tools technical team. Following Ernie will be Ed Woods, a Tivoli Performance IT specialist. And the speaker that follows that is Mike Bracey, and you may remember him from past presentations as well. Mike is a Z-Series DB2 and DB2 Tools technical specialist working for IBM in the UK. So now I'd like to turn it over to Ernie. Ernie?
Thank you, Diane, and good day to everyone on the call. We're going to be talking to the presentation today, and some of you may have downloaded the presentation off the website. We unfortunately have put it in two different packaging formats. Some of you may have downloaded the presentation, and it was in three parts. Some of you may have downloaded one presentation, which combined the three parts. So for the first discussion, which I'll be giving, you should refer to part one, and I'm currently on slide number two. The title of this slide is Convergence Activities. So IBM acquired Candle Corporation with the idea in mind of taking, at least from the DB2 performance management perspective, the Performance Monitor, Performance Expert, legacy IBM offering, and the Omegamon XE for DB2 offering, and combining the best functions of both products into a single integrated solution. So we see here in the bottom of slide two what you might want to call a convergence roadmap, where there are going to be certain combinations of products. So if a customer has a Performance Expert version 2 and or Omegamon XE for DB2 version 300, we're going to converge that product offering into something called IBM Tivoli Omegamon XE for DB2 Performance Expert on ZOS version 3.1. And that is the official title. So if you've got any ideas on what would be a catchy little product title, please let me know, because that's a mouthful. At the same time, we have some customers that are running DB2 Performance Monitor version 8. The difference between Performance Expert and for Performance Monitor, the best way to phrase this is that the Performance Expert product is a combination of all of the functionality in Performance Monitor and the additional functionality in the Buffer Pool Analyzer, plus a few additional expert functions that have been delivered in the rule of thumb area and the SQL query component of the Performance Warehouse. So we're continuing that. So customers will have a choice of whether to buy the converged product with either the Performance Expert or the Performance Monitor flavor. We're also continuing to market and sell Buffer Pool Analyzer as a standalone solution. Version 3 was announced at the same time of the converged product last December. However, this has just been a repackaging at this point, so there is no additional new functionality delivered in the version 3 product of the Buffer Pool Analyzer. So let's go to the next slide, which is slide 3. And what we had was an objective, and what the objectives were several different areas. One is that we wanted to provide an integrated solution across all the Z-Series middleware environments. So we wanted to be able to provide a solution that would allow you to monitor not only DB2, but possibly ZOS, CICS, WebSphere, and so on. We had a number of customer requirements for both product lines. We had 18 requirements for the Performance Monitor, Performance Expert customer, and 15 requirements for the Omegamon customer that were satisfied by the convergence. And we wanted to take a look at all of the functions in both products and try to pick the best approach and use that from an evolutionary standpoint moving forward. So what we did was we conducted an analysis of the product portfolio from a marketing and strategy perspective. The joint development teams performed a detailed analysis of each individual function within the products to try to determine which functions were weak, which functions were strong, and that constituted, the strong functions obviously constituted what we decided to move forward with. We talked with a number of customers, both internal IBM customers and external customers like yourself. We also had a number of interviews with different customers, the Customer Advisory Council. We sent questionnaires to a number of customers, and then we reviewed all of the known customer requirements for each of the legacy products. And we're on the next slide. So what we've done with version 3.1, which was again announced on December 16th and is now generally available, is that we've done two things. We've simplified the architecture from an address space perspective, and we'll talk about more details surrounding that in a minute. We've combined some of the server functions of Performance Expert into the Megamon server environment, and we've provided a number of functions that satisfy a number of outstanding user requirements. The main ones are the integrated monitoring of a number of different environments on ZOS, a VTAM as well as a thin web browser client user interface, reporting near-term history and object analysis reporting, DB2 Connect monitoring, and expert analysis and rule of thumb query analysis within the DB2 Performance Warehouse, and also buffer pool analysis for the customer that has the Performance Expert flavor of the product. So next slide, which is slide 5. And again, when we put this presentation together, there was some animation behind this. So depending upon what version of Adobe Acrobat you're running, this particular slide and the next one may take a minute or two to load. So we apologize for that. So this slide represents the architecture today prior to the Converge product. On the left-hand side, if you've printed these in color, you'll see the brown and the tan blocks describe the existing OmegaMon architecture. And we're going to leave that for just a second because we'll talk about that in more detail on the next slide. On the right in the gray, you'll see the architecture associated with the Performance Monitor, Performance Expert customer. The key message in all of this is, if you notice, that for a Performance Expert customer to run online monitoring, you have to have one set of subsystems or started tasks running for each DB2 subsystem that's active in an LPAR. And for each DB2 system, you can have as many as 3 started tasks running in order to have a completely enabled Performance Expert online monitoring environment. So in this particular example, I've got 3 DB2 subsystems running in this LPAR. In order to support that from a monitoring framework perspective, I would have to run 9 started tasks in that LPAR in order to provide me with an integrated online monitoring solution. So you can see from a management perspective as well as from an overhead perspective, this created a tremendous burden on the Performance Monitor, Performance Expert customer today. So if we go to the next slide, we'll see what we've done with the convergence. Now, again, because this is animation, you're going to notice a couple things that come out, and I want to point out right away. You see the red X's through the ISPF online monitoring icon and also the FAT PE client Java application at the bottom of the screen. This has not been implemented in the current 3.1 version of the Converge product. This is a plan for later consolidation and a future release of the Converge product. So today, we will support the ISPF classic interface from the Performance Monitor, Performance Expert perspective, as well as the FAT client running on Windows. In a future release of the product, it is our intention to remove support for those two components. The OmegaMon customer will also notice that we don't have any representation of the CUA interface as well. That is and continues to be embedded in the product. We made a bad decision when we rolled out that we thought we were going to functionally stabilize and remove those components. We've heard from a number of you that this is something you definitely do not want us to do. So we expect to be delivered via PTF late this quarter. Some enhancements to the configuration and customization tool called ICAT, which will enable you to install and configure the CUA component. And for the existing OmegaMon customer, you can actually manually configure and install that component today. So on the left-hand side, you can see the new management environment from an architecture perspective. So what we've done is we run an OmegaMon address space. Within that, we've embedded the functionality of the existing Performance Expert server. We run one of those per LPAR, and I can manage any number of DB2 subsystems with that single address space. If I elect to do management and view performance information from the portal thin client browser-based user interface, I have some additional address spaces that I need to run. The agent address space, a management server address space, which can run either on Z or can be placed on a Windows environment, and then the portal server, which runs in a Windows environment. If I want to look at DB2 performance across the sixplex, I would have to run a data collector, an agent address space, and a management server for each additional LPAR. For the Candle customer, you'll also notice that we've changed some of our terminology. So what we refer to, for example, is the Candle Net portal. We're now referring to this as the Tivoli Enterprise portal and so on. So there has been some nomenclature change as well. Okay, so the next slide talks to a summary of what we've done with the Converge product. We have real-time monitoring. Threads and statistics level information is being collected. We're collecting instrumentation from a DB2 gateway environment. And by the way, you can do this whether you've selected the performance monitor or the performance expert flavor of the product offering. We're going to allow object analysis for activity, DB2 activity at a volume and data set level. We're providing a view of the sysplex and data sharing environment. A near-term history collection, trace collection, which has also been embedded not only in the online monitors but in the performance warehouse. There's a lot of process support built into the performance warehouse component. The DB2 performance monitor reporting capability, which has always historically been the most robust and the most accurate performance monitoring, performance management reporting solution on the market. And then the performance warehouse with some rule of thumb and expert analysis support. And again, for the performance expert customer, buffer pool analysis with expert advice and object placement simulation. So we should be on slide 8 now. So if I'm an OmegaMon customer, what's going to be new for me? So one of the big things is that you're going to start seeing us use the IFI to obtain instrumentation. Whereas before, you may have been seeing instrumentation data that came through control block chaining or SVC screening. So as we move forward, we're going to rely less and less on control block scanning. So we'll have more data that's consistent and accurate, and over time, we should see the instrumentation facility improve to provide most, if not all, of the necessary instrumentation. What we call world-class batch reporting, and again, DB2 Performance Monitor, Performance Expert batch reports have been around for a number of years, and quite frankly, the lab even uses these. Gopal and Akira at the performance group at the lab use these to test performance changes with new releases of DB2. We not only deliver that functionality fully exploited at GA, but in many cases, months before GA. We've added some recent extensions to help the version 7 customer plan for his version 8 migration, package level accounting, lock suspension reports, some extensions to the SQL activity report, and then some extensions to some of the computations around the IFCA 225 report for storage analysis. We've got the performance warehouse, which will provide you the ability to write rules of thumb and manage data that's in the performance warehouse to perform historical trending and reporting on performance information. For the customer that's got a DB2 Connect environment, we provide DB2 Connect monitoring capability. And we also provide you the ability to look at snapshot history for online ad hoc problem analysis to see changes in performance metrics from a thread and a subsystem level over time through a snapshot history basis. And then we also have exceptional events and exception processing for things like deadlocks, timeouts, and other events. So the next slide, which is slide 9, describes what a PM or PE customer can get with the new Converge product. And again, this is things that the classic Omegamon customer has come to know in their product. But we're going to see an integrated cross Z-Series monitoring capability, assuming that you have bought and have installed the other companion products for CICS, IMS, WebSphere, etc. Near-term history. By near-term history, what we mean is we collect events as each thread completes, store them online in a data set, which allows you to look at a per-thread view of what has happened in your DB2 system, and we also perform some aggregation at a plan and package level for that. Object analysis, where I can understand DB2 I/O activity, WLM enclave information for stored procedures, a smaller server footprint, and that, quite frankly, is, I think, a big reason why a lot of customers today, they have PM or PE, but they only run the batch reporting because the server overhead and the number of started tasks that you have to run becomes very unwieldy. So this is going to be a big benefit for the existing PM/PE customer. The VTAM interface has been another strong requirement, so you can now get away from having to sign on a TSO and use ISPF. You can now use the VTAM client. And then some other improvements. And, again, we have 18 customer requirements that we've satisfied as part of this. So we're not just talking to the existing Omegamon and the existing Performance Monitor customer, though. So if you're a customer that's using another solution, or you may not have a solution, we think that this is a very strong offering and that we've got a very good, tightly integrated product for you to use as well. In addition to the convergence, we've also had some incremental additional changes delivered to the product as part of the version 3.1 rollout. These may be things that are important to you. So for the existing Omegamon customer, we've added some additional workspace support in XE for thread monitoring, DDF activity, and enclave support. And we've also provided some additional capability to do correlation at a CICS transaction level, assuming that you have the CICS product and the dashboard edition installed. We've extended and added some additional support in the PE 225, IFCA 225 report for storage, virtual storage reporting, and a few other things as well. So, now we get to the final question, and this is, what is this going to cost me? So we do have a couple of scenarios here. If you're a customer that has a Performance Monitor or Performance Expert, current versions with subscription and support current, and you have Omegamon XE for DB2 version 300 and current subscription and support, this is a free thing. So you do not have to pay any charges for the Converge product. So if you're a customer that has Omegamon XE for DB2, there'll be an incremental upgrade for you, and you would choose whether you wanted to have the Performance Monitor or the Performance Expert flavor of the offering. Likewise, if you were a Performance Monitor or Performance Expert customer, there would be an incremental charge to upgrade to the Converge product. But again, we think we've got a very competitive price. You can talk to your local IBM sales and marketing person. They'd be more than happy to talk you through this, and I'm sure that they'd be able to provide you with a very competitive pricing as well. So with that, I'm going to turn this back over to Ed Woods for the next part of the presentation. Thank you very much. Go ahead, Ed.
Thank you, Ernie. I want to thank everyone on the call for taking the time to be with us today. Very excited to have the opportunity to talk to all you folks about what's happening with Omegamon XE for DB2 PM PE. One thing I want to stress, and now so we're all on the same slide. I'm looking at a slide that on the top says Omegamon and Tivoli Enterprise Portal, an integrated solution, and it has a triangle in the middle of the slide. So that's the slide I'm working from. I apologize for the multiple different files and things like that. So just so we're all on the same page, this is what I'm looking at. So the first thing I want to stress is this truly is an integrated solution for DB2 performance and availability management. When you get that tape from IBM, you're going to go through a single install process that will install the various components, facilities, and capabilities that Ernie has described up to this point. The beauty of it is then is that you have a single performance and availability solution for DB2 that plugs into this component called the Tivoli Enterprise Portal and provides facilities such as what we call the Omegamon dashboard so that you can have not only DB2 performance and availability management, but it also plugs into the bigger picture that Ernie alluded to earlier, wherein you're in a data sharing mode, you're running Sysplex, you're talking to CICS, it's talking to IMS, it's talking to various other components, you know, ANSI as well as other areas of the enterprise, the ability to have a true end-to-end monitoring and availability management view. So when we talk about Omegamon, we talk about the ability to plug into the portal, to have the GUI. And if you look at the triangle, to the top of the triangle to the right, I mentioned things like high-level monitoring, visualization, multi-system views. This is one thing that the portal does a very good job of, is provides this multi-system high-level view. But that being said, there is always going to be the deep dive, detailed capabilities of Omegamon. So if you look down at the bottom portion of the slide to the left, where it says 3270 interface, there is a 3270 interface and will continue to be 3270 interface support. We get this question a lot. Well, now that we're going towards a portal technology, does that mean 3270 is going away? And the answer is no. 3270 will continue to be there. And 3270 provides, you know, many of the deep dive capabilities in terms of subsystem deep dive analysis, thread details, locks, and things like that that you need to be able to see on a detail level. Also, on the right-hand lower portion of the slide, I mentioned Omegamon XE, which implies the GUI interface, the thin client that Ernie mentioned before. And this as well is where we can see subsystem-level monitoring and views. But also, this is where you have the ability to do the integrated automation and alert management. That's truly one of the strengths of the Omegamon XE suite. Not only do you have the ability to just do passive monitoring and management, you also have the ability to do alerting very easily. You can alert on any metric that's gathered by the Omegamon XE monitor and then also drive automated actions off of that basis as well. So now going to the next slide where the header says Omegamon example scenarios. I have some red boxes that I put on here. Basically, these red boxes indicate some various scenarios that we're going to walk through to talk about what the capabilities of the tool are. So we're going to have thread management. And then we're going to look at things like the Connect monitoring, which for those longtime Omegamon customers, that was one area where we didn't really have coverage in terms of Omegamon DB2 monitoring was the ability to see what's happening inside the DB2 Connect gateways. We have that capability now, and that's very exciting. Down at the lower level, we'll talk about I/O analysis, look at things like examples of object analysis, and this in turn will then platform into the last portion of the presentation, which will be Mike's discussion of buffer pool tuning. And I'll also mention an example scenario about the automation. What are the automated action capabilities, automated corrections, et cetera? How does the tool highlight, alert, and issue commands for you automatically? So these are the four scenarios we'll discuss within the tool, and then there will be a Q&A when it's all said, and then we'll be happy to address any other questions you folks may have. So, going to the next slide, which says using Omegamon XE, an example solution scenario. The first thing that people typically want to do when you bring up your Omegamon monitor for the first time is, well, you want to look at the threads. You want to see what's happening inside that particular DB2 environment. Now, one thing that's a challenge nowadays is that you have all these applications connecting to DB2 that open up these banks of hundreds of threads, and you have just tons and tons of threads that are connecting in now into DB2, and you're constantly having to pour through all these various threads to find the ones that are truly causing you problems. So the ability to have a facility that quickly, easily isolates and highlights the problem threads and gets you down to where the problem truly is something that can be quite useful. Now you get a variety of various thread thread activity views, thread summary views, et cetera, with a Megamon, some based in the 3270, others based in the portal level technology. The example I'm going to show you in this particular discussion is going to be a portal based example, and we'll show you basically how you can use the power of the Tivoli Enterprise portal combined with a Megamon to be able to target specific problem threads, to use the filtering and highlighting capabilities to help identify a problem. So in this case, the performance analyst is responsible for identifying and managing problem applications across multiple subsystems. The analyst would like to have a customized view of thread activity with the ability to easily filter and highlight problems. And if the problem thread is isolated, the analyst would like to be able to issue a manual action to address the issue. And so this is what we'll show in our first scenario. So going to the next slide, which says use the Megamon XD portal. Tivoli Enterprise portal combines provides powerful capabilities. What we see is one of the default views, or workspaces as we call it, that you get out of the box when you install a Megamon XE. Now, as you can see, if you look at the left corner of the GUI screen, you'll see that not only do we have DB2 monitoring that's checked in for multiple DB2s, so we see entries for DSNA, B, C, D, and T, you also see entries in the navigation tree on the left for KIX, IMS, networks, MQ, etc. So this is an example of how Omegamon XE monitoring is not just a DB2-specific point solution, but a monitoring tool built around a powerful GUI technology that combines the ability to monitor and manage a wide variety of subsystems and components. This enterprise event view that we're looking at here basically just highlights alerts coming from a variety of sources. So the portal gives you the ability to manage multiple subsystems from a single screen. Like in this example here, we would be able to click on any one of the DB2 subsystems, DSNA, B, C, D, et cetera, to get more detail, and then drill down to other detailed displays and continue to just click and go from there. Going to the next slide, which mentions the header is portal workspace customization. What we're going to look at here is taking one of the product-provided screens, or what we call in a Megamon speak a workspace, and making some adjustments to that, a simple process of making a few adjustments so that we'll filter that to look at specific threads. And the example that I'll show in the next few slides will target a customer that wants to look at specifically JDBC and distributed threads and have a highlighted view that targets problem applications for those types of workloads. You commonly have the ability to make these kind of customized workspaces, as we call them, and you can take any of the product-provided workspaces, of which there's quite a few, and then make the necessary adjustments to target whatever your specific monitoring needs are. If you make a customized workspace, such as I demonstrate in this example we'll see here, the customized view will be saved in the Tivoli Enterprise portal. And the portal is a common area, if you will, where all the various Omegamon monitors connect to and all the various users connect through, so that if you build this custom display, it may be used by any of your colleagues. So going to the next slide, which says building a custom thread management view. So you notice how if you look on the left portion under the navigation tree, I've clicked under DSNA and exploded up the view. And so you see you have options now for thread activity and system status and detailed thread exception and lock conflicts and subsystem. And you would click in any one of those lines to go to various views of detail of information, et cetera, depending on what it is you want to see. So basically the navigation flow is you click on the left slide, it explodes up the tree, and then you click to go wherever you want to click from there. So in this case, I'm going to take the I have a couple different options in terms of my thread views. I could use the thread activity overview or use the view that's called detailed thread exceptions. Either one of those will probably work for our purposes. I just happen to select detailed thread exceptions, which would then in turn take me to the following slide, where in the header of that slide says thread view customization. And so now I'm looking at a slide, or a workspace, if you will, that is the what we call the detailed thread exception view. What I want to do at this point, then, is instead of just taking the default workspace, which has a ton of various threads, some of which I may care about and some of which are not as, of as much interest because typically in most scenarios, hopefully 90-plus percent of your workload is going through just fine. You're looking for the problems, the potential bottleneck areas, and so that's where you want to filter and tune and tweak. So in this case, we're starting with the thread overview that gives us everything, and what we'll do is we'll do a right-click in the data portion, the bottom portion of the window, and then you get a pop-up, such as what we see here. And in that pop-up, you have several options. The option that we're going to select in this particular case is properties. So if you do your right-click and you select properties, you'll then go to a slide, or you'll see a view that looks very much like what we have on our next slide. So this slide I'm looking at now is add filters to the view to control content. This particular properties view gives you the ability to control very much what you see on the particular workspace. So from this particular pop-up, if you will, you have the ability to do quite a bit. So you see in the middle portion, you'll see a tab that says Query, a tab that says Filters, a tab that says Thresholds, a tab that says Style. Each of those various tabs lets you specify different information in terms of the content of what appears on the screen, the filtering, in other words, the ability to filter down the data that appears on the screen, Thresholds, which I'll demonstrate shortly, that shows how you highlight various things, and then Style, which controls the layout, the headers, and things like that. In this particular scenario, I clicked on the Filters tab, and then also what I'm going to do as well is you see a red box that says select which columns are appear in the workspace. Now, I'm pointing at where it says like connection type, plan name, package name, correlation ID, and underneath that you'll see check marks. You can select those check marks and either select or deselect them. That controls then whether or not those particular columns of information appear on the display. Now, where I might take advantage of this is just so that I can fit the key information on the display. Let's say, for example, I care about things like plan name, package name, auth ID, maybe a few key metrics like get page count, CPU elapsed, DB2 elapsed, things like that, so that I just want to target some key metrics, put that on the screen, and filter out the things that are of not as much interest. The premise is to have a display that's just not as busy, but have just the key items I'm interested in. This gives you the ability to control that. The next step is, of course, you want to be able to say, since part of the premise was I'm only interested in distributed and JDBC threads and things like that, is the ability to filter based on things like plan name, package name, and have and/or logic. That's where if you look in the middle portion of the panel, underneath the column headers, you'll see that you can click in there. It almost looks like cells in a spreadsheet. And if you click in there, you can say things like scan for a string within a string, put in a value for an expression. And so this is where you would put in the plan names, package names, auth IDs, whatever it is that you want to put in there. And you can have multiple lines and columns, and the net result of that then is that you can have what amounts to and or type of logic to control the true content of what appears on the display. This is how we get to our more filtered type of a view. So going to our next slide, which says highlight potential problems. So now starting from the premise that I've filtered my view so that I'm looking at just the particular threads and things that I'm interested in, the next thing is I may want to also be able to highlight certain columns of information so that if there is a problem, it will jump right out at me, and I can highlight it in red, yellow, whatever. And so this is where now you see I've clicked on the tab that says thresholds instead of filters, and then I've specified in a particular column what constitutes a critical, like in this case, if it's using more than 2 seconds of CPU, I'm going to highlight it as a potential problem. So going to the next slide, that says thread exceptions view is now filtered and highlighted. So now what we have is instead of the default thread view, which is what we started with, we now have a filtered highlighted view. So now I'm looking at, in this case, just a couple of JDBC threads. I'm only looking at the ones that have met a certain criteria. I'm highlighting those areas that I might view as a potential problem, like CPU or get page count or whatever. And then, in turn, this is something where I can have just a view that's targeted towards my specific needs, highlight areas of interest I might want to see. It's very easy to see and filter through, whereas before I might have had hundreds of threads to walk through to find the problem. Now it's very targeted, highlighted, specific to the problem I'm trying to isolate. So now I've just customized the lower portion of the view here. You could also do the same thing as well with the graphic portion, the top portion of the screen where it says lock zone. I could apply the same filters and techniques, et cetera, there. So I'm only going to look at the lock ownership for those same types of threads if I wanted to apply the same filtering options to that as well. That is feasible. When it's all said and done, what I can do is on the top portion of the screen where it says File, right underneath Tivoli Enterprise Portal, you can do File, and then there's a Save option. You can save this display under a name, give it a name, and then it's stored in the portal and may be used by your colleagues for later reference, reuse, etc. So this mechanism then is powerful in that it gives you the ability to very quickly and easily create displays that are targeted towards your specific monitoring and analysis requirements. It's the whole thing that I refer to as visualization, the ability to very easily visualize and isolate and identify where your problem applications are. The last step in the scenario was the ability to issue a command. So, in this particular example, now we've gone to the next slide, which says to issue a command. Not only can I view things from here, I can also issue commands. So, in this case, I could select the particular thread that I've determined is a potential problem, do a right-click on that line, and then we get our pop-up again, similar to the pop-up that we saw earlier in our scenario. And you see the top portion of the pop-up says, take action. So also underneath you could do edit actions. So if you have the authority to edit actions, you could actually put action commands in there. In this case, we're just going to go ahead and we're going to issue a command. So this is a take action. So I would select take action, click on that, and that would get me to the view that I see on the very next slide, which says select a command at the top of the slide. In this case, I've said take action, and so now I get a take action pop-up. I have a potential number of different commands I could issue. If you look at the line where it says name and then cancel thread, if you look to the right of that, you'll see a little arrow that points down. You could click on that and you would get a drop-down menu that would let you select a variety of different commands that may be predefined and ready to go. In this particular example, I just happened to pick on the cancel thread command. And what we can do then is we can go ahead and kill the particular thread in question. You notice how it puts the appropriate token in there. So we see cancel thread, open paren, 6832. So that actually took the correct token for the particular thread in question that I'm going to endeavor to kill using this command. So I would select the command, and then under destination systems, this basically would execute the command on the LPAR or MVSA where the agent is running this particular example. I would click OK, and then cancel command would actually go ahead and execute and kill the thread in question. So this is the whole premise of how we can come from just a high-level overview, filter it down, identify a problem, issue a command in the form of a corrective action. Now, in this case, the command is a manual command. I'll show an example a little later on of how you can do it automatically using the integrated automation of Omegamon. So going to the next slide, where the header says workspace customization. So the workspace customization techniques you can use for any Omegamon XE-provided workspace. You get a very wide variety of workspaces, as we call them. Workspaces is another term for a screen. You get a large variety of these workspaces out of the box when you install the portal portion of the tool. My experience typically has been in the field that those workspaces are a good starting point, but customers commonly will maybe take a few of these and make some adjustments, some tweaks, put in some filters, maybe add or remove some columns to make it more targeted towards how they want to see things. Anytime you customize a view, make your own custom workspace. Again, this is stored in the portal server. And this approach that I've shown here was an approach which was for just a single subsystem. You could do the same type of approach for multiple DB2s and have multi-DB2 consolidated thread views across data sharing groups or whatever. And again, I'll mention as well, we talked about this earlier, the dashboard edition capability, wherein basically then you can have information integrated not only from multiple DB2s, but also pulling in information from KIX, IMS, ZOS, WebSphere, a variety of sources may be added and integrated into these custom displays. And that's a common thing. People will like to see things like CICS task information, for example, integrated with DB2 thread information so you can see both sides of a DB2 thread talking to KIX as a simple example. All of this customization and flexibility is built into the portal if you have the Dashboard Edition enabled. And that's truly one of the true powers of the Vividly Enterprise Portal. So the next slide mentions on the header automation scenario. So what we're going to do here is what I showed before was the ability to isolate a thread using the graphic visualization capabilities of the portal to filter, highlight, take advantage of the intrinsic filter and or logic capabilities, et cetera, highlighting capabilities of the portal, and then issue a manual corrective action. What we're going to do now is take it to the next step a little bit here, and we're going to talk about the integrated automation that's built into the tool. In this particular scenario, the performance analyst is responsible for identifying and managing problem applications, again, same as before. In this case, the analyst would like to be able to have Omegamon automatically identify the problem application thread and then have Omegamon automatically issue the corrective action to address the issue. So in this case, there doesn't have to be a manual override such as what I showed before. It's up to Omegamon to go ahead and do the identification and issue the command. That's one of the beauties of the Vividly Enterprise Portal is these simple automation techniques that I'll demonstrate are built right into the tool, and it's a simple process of click and drag and go. You don't have to write rex execs. You don't have to do fancy scripting. It's just built into the tool set. So going to the next slide, which says automation example. We're going to automate the kill of a runaway thread. The kill is a simple example. It's nice to show. I do have some customers that do have problems with runaway threads, they spend a lot of time just manually monitoring for these things and then having to go and manually kill them. And anything they can do to identify certain ones on an automated basis and clean them up without having to constantly do manual overrides, they find of benefit. What we're looking at in this particular slide is an example of what we call the situation editor. All the alerting and automation built into Omegamon XE is built upon a construct called a situation. A situation is basically a mechanism whereby you can say what you're going to check for, and if that criteria is true, then you can go ahead and issue a corrective action. So there's multiple tabs, just like what we were looking at on the properties view. And we've clicked on the tab that says condition. So the condition that we're looking for here is a two-parter. And we're looking for a get page count. So if you look in the middle portion of the screen, it says get page count and plan name. So basically, we're looking for a get page count of greater than 1,000 and a plan name that's equal to a certain plan name. A fairly simple scenario here. You can add additional logic, additional things like auth IDs, elapsed times, whatever. You can have and or logic, multiple metrics, et cetera, make it time of day sensitive, however you want to do it. I chose a fairly simple example just for demonstration purposes here, but you can make this much more sophisticated depending upon what your requirements are. So you can, by clicking on the Add Attributes button, which if you look down and to the right portion of the screen, you'll see a button that says Add Attributes in Advanced. That's how you would add additional columns or metrics of information to the situation logic. And then you can have multiple lines. So that's how you would get your and or logic capabilities. You see a red box on the left side that says specify sampling interval. That says basically how often we'll do the check for the alerting question. And in this case, we have it set to 1 minute. You can set it down to 30 seconds, run it every 15 minutes or half hour, or whatever makes sense, depending upon whatever the problem is that you're checking for. On the lower right portion, you can specify whether this is a critical or a warning or an informational level alert. And then the run at startup is checked. What that means is that when Omegamon starts up, it will automatically start doing this check. If you look in the top portion of this pop-up, you see tabs that say distribution, expert advice, action, etc. Distribution basically controls where the alert runs, so that you can have it run on some DB2s and not others, for example, or you could distribute it out to all DB2s and all LPARs. Expert advice basically lets you specify what someone should do if they see the alert. Action is where we're going to issue the corrective command that I'll show in just a second. And then you also have do until logic, which is the until tab. So going to the next slide, which says specifying the cancel command, the automation correction example, Here's where I've clicked on the action tab, and now I have the ability to put in the actual command. In this case, again, I just chose a simple cancel command just to show a simple example. So I can specify, if you look down the lower portion of this box, do I want to take this action on the first item or each item? What this means is that I might have multiple threads that meet this criteria. Do I want to do it for each of them, or do I want to only do it for the first one I pick up? You can control where the action is executed. So, in other words, where the Omegamon agent is running, or where this mechanism called a management server is running. And then, do I want to do the action twice in a row, or do I only want to take the action once, is basically what the last thing amounts to. Now, in this case, I'm just going to go ahead and take it on the first one I pick up. We're going to issue a cancel command to the first DB2 thread I pick up that I determine is a runaway. So going to the next slide, now what I've done here is I have a display that's very similar to what we were looking at before with our filtered view. So what I've done here is I've just made a very simple little view where I'm looking at a particular plan. We see the package name, the auth ID. We're looking at the get page count. We're looking at the thread status. And so now what we'll see here is, if you recall, as I said, let's create a situation that looks for a particular thread that exceeds a certain number of get pages. And if that is true, it's going to go ahead and kick off an alert and then actually go ahead and issue the automated action. In this case, it's just going to go ahead and kill it. Very simple read, react, and fire kind of a scenario. So going to the next slide, which says the cancel command is issued, here we actually see the cancel command. So what's happened then is the situation is running within the Omegamon monitoring agent address space. It picks up the situation is true, as we call it in Omegamon speak, and then goes ahead and issues the action, in this case a cancel. And what we're looking at in this example is the cancel command that's been issued to the ZOS console, and it goes ahead and kills the thread in question. So what I've shown you here is a simple automation scenario where we've specified criteria, put in an automated action, gone ahead and run the automated action. And the beauty of it is you can specify all that, set it all up. I didn't have to write any Rex code. I didn't have to do any procedural language. What I've showed you is the whole deal right here. You specify it in a pop-up. You do it, issue a command to start it, which amounts to a right-click and start, and then off it goes. So going to the next slide, which says about Omegamon automation. So Omegamon XE basically provides a GUI-based monitoring alerting automation capability that's all integrated, bundled together. You can use any alert, potentially, that's built into the tool to drive these automation mechanisms. You have what are called situations, which is what I've demonstrated here, to provide what I would call the basic reflex automation. But there's also more sophisticated automation capabilities that I won't really have the time to show you today that are built on a mechanism called a policy. In this case, you can even do multiple commands and have things like issue a command, check to see if the command worked, and then based upon the output of that command, issue other subsequent commands, et cetera, from there. So the automation scenario I demonstrated here was what I think is a fairly simple one, just so you could see how it works. But you can have these things be very sophisticated, very powerful. And again, the beauty of it is that it's integrated directly within the Omegamon GUI. No Rex, no procedural code, et cetera. It's a tool that's there right within your hands, easy to use, easy to implement. Now, going from the first two scenarios, now we're going to go to a scenario. The header of the slide is going to say connect monitoring scenario. Now what we're going to talk about is integrated DB2 Connect monitoring. As I alluded to early on, for those longtime Omegamon users on the call here today, one area where Omegamon didn't really provide any information was what was happening with those Connect gateways in terms of what's going on those devices, what's the workload, what's just the general activity from the DB2 Connect gateway perspective. So one of the beauties of the integrated solution that we have now is some of those gaps in the Omegamon suite have now been filled, and we have what is truly a much more complete, robust solution. So in this scenario, It's basically, we're talking about integrated DB2 Connect monitoring. The performance analyst is responsible for identifying and managing problem applications from a variety of sources, including DB2 Connect. So the analyst would like to have a real-time view of Connect activity, just like they had one similar deal for threads that were local to ZOS. And then same premise as before, have Omegamon highlight problem DB2 Connect applications. So the next slide, which says on the top DB2 Connect gateway status, one thing that you see now that we didn't show in the prior slides was we now have another line entry underneath thread activity that says DB2 Connect server. What this means is now you have another point on the navigation tree with the V3.10 version of the tool whereby you can click and it will actually go ahead and pull up server status information, version information, performance stats, et cetera, for what's happening on the various DB2 Connect servers that have connected to the DB2 in question that we're looking at here. Going to the next slide, what this provides as well then is the ability to see not only just what's happening from the gateway server perspective, but also the ability to correlate it back to the thread activity. And so you see now with V3.10, we're pulling in information for Connect server, the ability to correlate that to the threads that are connected to DB2. You also see entries in the pop-up that I have highlighted in red relative to thread DDF activity, thread enclave, et cetera. There's now a lot more information available to be able to understand and analyze what's happening from a DB2 Connect perspective as opposed to just seeing things in terms of what's happening from the ZOS level. We're truly integrating this information together. Going to the next slide, using the techniques such as what I've demonstrated before, the analyst is also able to take the various provided views that you get out of the box and use similar techniques. In this case, we're just going to highlight a potential field where we just want to highlight, like in this case, we're highlighting towards the bottom full outbound byte sent. The idea then is the ability to then highlight, use the customization filtering techniques similar to what we've demonstrated before. Just because this is in performance information coming from DB2 Connect, because it's all connecting to the Tivoli Enterprise portal, we have this common methodology and mechanisms in place to give you the ability to be able to do the same highlighting analysis, high-level overview, breakdown views, et cetera. Anytime you customize a view or a workspace, again, as we call it, that workspace may be stored in the portal and may be then in turn used by yourself later at a later point or used by your colleagues, et cetera. Same thing as well when we talk about the automation that I discussed. Situation automation, policy automation, all built into the tool, and it's eligible as well for gateway management as it is for just on the ZOS level. The next slide shows an example of the Connect information that's available in 3270. I get the question all the time, because we're doing things in a portal, does this mean that 3270 is dead? And this is a good example right here of no, 3270 is not dead. 3270 is very much an alive, vibrant, living part of the product. You can see right here we now have a 3270 view of Connect activity along with the portal-based views that I've shown up to this point. So you see what we're looking at here for those that are not familiar with this. The top line is the information line. ZTCNS is the name of the panel in question. V310 is the version of the tool in question. D751 is the DB2 subsystem in question that we're looking at. And then going down a couple lines, you have option A to see Connect server information, B for overview. And then we're looking at option C, which is statement level info. So here we're looking at the particular SQL that's being executed through Connect, and we're seeing things like response time, CPU time, number of transmissions, number of statements, et cetera. So 3270 as well as portal. Going on to our final scenario. Now, this scenario will then in turn launch us into my colleague's discussion of the buffer pool analysis portion. In this case, what we're going to discuss is a very nice portion of Omegamon that's been around for a long time called object analysis. Object analysis provides an I/O and get page breakdown of what's happening in the DB2 subsystem. We'll break it down by object, down to database, table space index, physical data set, extent level, correlated to the DASD volume, correlated back to the applications in question, and provides a very nice ability to see what's happening from an I/O perspective, get page perspective on the subsystem as a whole. It also gives the ability to see potentially the impact of non-DB2 related I/O, and that some of the views as well we'll see. For example, you'll be able to see not only the DB2 I/O, but if there's I/O coming from non-DB2 sources, you'll be able to see that as well. One of the values of this particular information is the ability to then in turn get a very good grasp of what's happening from an I/O and get page analysis. And as we commonly know, I/O is a big impactor when it comes to performance. So going to the next slide here. Okay, what we're looking at on the next slide, which says classic interface, we're seeing now the new main menu of the classic interface portion of the screen here. And you see in the middle, it says connect server, and then O for object analysis. Well, G is the new connect server portion that was added. That was one of the prior screens I showed you. And then O for object analysis is where we're going to go next. So in this case, we're going to do an O command on the top line. And then we'll get to a view similar to what we're looking at where it says object analysis, I/O, and get page analysis by database with drill down detail. The object analysis collector is something that a lot of customers typically run on an ongoing basis. And you can do that because it doesn't use DB2 traces to gather its I/O data. We're actually basically running an algorithm that looks at the I/O subsystem on ZOS and then in turn correlates the data back to the objects, back through the subsystem, back to the threads, etc., as well as correlates it to the volumes. But we're not firing up what we would think of as the traditional DB2 IFKID traces to get this. We're actually getting the data by analyzing what's happening at the I/O subsystem level in ZOS. So in this particular example, what we're looking at here is we have several letter commands we can issue. You can do option A to just show me what's allocated, but we've selected here option B, which is the database activity. So in this case, we're looking at a database, and we've actually drilled into that particular database to see the individual objects, the space names within there. So you see multiple table spaces, and then to the right of that, you see percent get page, percent I/O, and then in the middle you'll see how many get pages have been done by each of these various objects, how many reads, how many prefetches, how many writes, etc. Now, one thing I'll mention is that this is information that's gathered over an interval. When you start the object analysis collector, you can specify the interval of time that it goes and gathers the data, and then once it hits the top end of that interval, that time limit, it goes ahead and then resets the buckets and starts to gather again. So in this case, if you look in the middle portion of the screen, kind of on the left-hand portion where it says interval time, you can see right here that we're running on a 15-minute interval. And then, unfortunately, my red box has the other portion of the screen obscured. That's where you would actually see how far you are into the current interval. So we see how many get pages underneath the time interval that have been done within this time frame. And then we see the get page counts broken out by object, in the lower portion of the screen. You can position your cursor and hit F10 to sort by any one of these columns. So you can sort by get page, sort by IOs, etc. And then, so a lot of people like to do things like position the cursor by percent get page, for example, and hit F10, and that would sort it. So you can see, like, the fifth object down here is doing 29% of the get pages and 21% of the IOs within the particular database in question here. Now, the next thing that's very powerful and nice about this particular display is that you can do option C for thread activity, which gets us to this particular view here, which is on the next slide, which says thread activity for an object. In this case, we're going to see what threads are driving this I/O activity that we're looking at here. In this case, we're looking at one, and we see the plan name, the auth ID, the correlation ID, as well as the get page, read counts, write counts, etc. And so basically what we're looking at here then is the workload that's driving our I/O. And this is oftentimes what people like to be able to see in terms of being able to do a detailed analysis. So what object analysis gives us is the real-time portion of what's happening on the system from an I/O and GET page perspective. And so this is oftentimes then very good input towards the buffer pool tuning exercise, which is really what we're driving at in this particular scenario here. And so what we'll show next is using the buffer pool analysis portion of OmegaMon, how you can then in turn take the information and things that we see real-time, combine it with what you get from the buffer pool tool, and come up with a much more complete buffer pool tuning analysis approach. So at this point, I'm going to turn it over to my colleague, Mike, and then Mike can go ahead and continue on from here.
Hello. Well, thank you very much, Ed. That was a very good discussion and of the powerful functions that we now have. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and perhaps I should also say good afternoon to any colleagues in the European time zone, like myself. In the last part of today's session, I'd like to take you through a case study that I put together recently using the BufferPort Analyzer. Just as a page check, we should be on page 41 of the combined presentation, or I would guess page 1 or perhaps 2 of the part 3 of the separate presentations. Whichever the page is titled, DB2 Buffer Pool Tuning with the Buffer Pool Analyzer, a case study. So the objective of this study was to, first of all, see if we could use the tool to reallocate objects between a number of pools as opposed to a single pool. And the idea behind this was to see if we could reduce the number of synchronous reads. Synchronous reads that cause delays to throughput, and therefore we would get an improvement in the throughput of a particular application. The second thing I was looking to do was to understand the relationship between storage and the hit ratio, or the success in keeping hold of synchronous read, page reads that we can hopefully reuse later on, which is the purpose of having a buffer pool. So just as a reminder, before we move on into BufferPort Analyzer, we all know that DB2 has four page read mechanisms that I know of anyway: synchronous read, and then the asynchronous mechanisms of sequential, dynamic, and list prefetch. Now, I don't know about you, but I normally work on the assumption that the asynchronous methods are working as designed. We've allocated sufficient storage for those page read mechanisms to bring the pages into the pool in advance of being used. And therefore, the one that I focus on is the number of synchronous reads, because the synchronous read is causing a real delay to your transaction or to your batch program, and therefore causing the threads to hold on to the resources for a longer period than we would like. Now, in terms of pages in the buffer pool, again, we have a number of groups of pages. Pages are either in use, they're latched, they're being used by a current thread, they're waiting to be written out, they're on the write queues, or they are waiting, hoping that they're going to be there and possibly reused. And again, we size normally on the basis that a buffer pool is at least large enough for the first two of those, and preferably and should be large enough for any pages we've prefetched in with one of the asynchronous methods. So what we're talking about is the sizing in addition to those three base requirements to give us reuse or avoid rereads, if you like, of pages. Now, of course, if you buffer pool sizing cannot be done independently of the rest of the system. If you over allocate buffer pools, then you'll be getting a call from your friendly system programmer, who will be complaining about auxiliary storage usage, and therefore it's something you have to do in conjunction with the rest of the users of the system. From your point of view, if you're using trapping statistics and putting that into a table, or have some way of looking at the statistics record on a regular basis, then the counter that we measure is page into read or page into write. If that is small or preferably zero, then you're okay. If that number is large, then it's a sure sign that buffer pools have been over allocated. So if we can now turn to page 42, just remind ourselves the functions of BufferPort Analyzer. The first and key part, of course, is the ability to run traces. Now, it would be nice to be able to say that we use the data gathered by the Migamon product, but because we've only converged these, we don't yet do that. So I'll forestall that question and say at the moment the BufferBall analyzer relies upon trace data from the IFI interface to do its simulation work. So we have a trace process that we can initiate either through some panels or with a batch program. We have a number of input parameters into that, which I'll discuss later on. So comprehensive tracing mechanism, and then what comes out of that is the reporting. And if you're familiar with traditional DB2PM style reports, then this is a very easy process to understand. We can sort the output, we can control the ordering, we can control filtering, and understand by object or by buffer pool, by plan, authorization ID, those sorts of qualifiers, what is happening within the buffer pool that have been traced. And finally, and very important in this part, we get data out that we can then load into DB2 tables in a performance database that we can then query and gather data over a period of time, so we can see not only what was happening yesterday, what was happening last week, what was happening last month. Very important from a ongoing process point of view. So having gathered our data and got some reports out, we can then do the analysis of that data and go through a process of object placement to decide on some rules for how we're going to place objects between pools, and also to get some feedback over if we were to choose a different buffer pool size, then what will be the resulting hit ratio for the pools in question. So that's using a simulation technique. And these results, this work is actually done on the workstation today, and the results are presented in a workstation format of tables and graphs and so on. So if you'd like now to move to the next foil, the case study itself, using a simple application that we put together here, workload generator, consists of 17 or so tables, a number of stored procedures that we drive through a REX program. The advantage of this application is it's complex enough to be representative, but it's simple enough to rerun and regenerate, and you can make changes to the environment and then test out the consequences of your changes. So to start with, I allocated all objects into a single buffer pool, BP20 in this particular case, which we sized at 1,000 pages. Now, I have to take a short pause at this point to let all the real DBAs in the audience get back up off the floor from laughing at a buffer pool of a mere 1,000 pages. Now, I realize that is artificially small. We could achieve with this particular application a tran rate of about 10 trans a second, 10 stored procedure calls a second. If I sized it at any larger than 1,000 pages, I wouldn't get sufficient I/O to be realistic. So I realize that 4 megabytes is minute in comparison to the gigabytes that many of you will have allocated for buffer pools, but that was for the purposes of this case study, to illustrate how the tool can be used. So bear with me. We ran the application for 3 minutes and traced for 2 minutes, continuous tracing. For simulation purposes, we do need a continuous trace. And having done that, I then took the data, used the BufferBall analyzer, the object placement and the simulation processes, and the rules that I chose were actually based on some customer experience I had in the last year or so, whereby rather than choosing index for a pool and data for another pool, which is a very common allocation method, indeed I was discussing this with a DBA just last week where they have chosen that method, and I guess many of you will use that that technique because it's very simple. I chose to use random into one pool and sequential into another pool. So I'm separating by random sequential, which the tool will tell me, rather than by index or data. Now, as it happens, I ought to strongly suspect that data will tend to be sequential and index tends to be random. It's a generalization, but I suspect that there'd be some truth there. And I also had a third pool for very small objects, which I was going to pin in memory completely. So that pool will be sized to hold these objects, which are only one or two pages size. And having made that change, I can then rerun the application and measure the outcome. So if we now move on to the next foil, that's foil number 44, application throughput before and after tuning. So I take an extract here from the output of the report of running this application, and we can see down the left-hand side the stored procedures, the primary stored procedures that do work against this database, the number of calls that we ran. Very simple application, by the way, based on department employees, projects, and you can see the number of employees that we added here, a number of employees that we fired, and the total tran rate did, as I hoped it would do, we improved the transaction rate from 8.9 to 9.5. Now, of course, that is partly dependent on the I/O subsystem, which I didn't have control of in this environment, but it was representative of a number of trials I made using this technique. And in all cases, we achieved an improvement in throughput. So the real proof is in measuring, looking at reports. So if we now move on to the next foil, which is slide 45, Buffalo Analyzer reports. And this is just a slice of the sort of information you get out of the reports. And I've taken the before and the after situation, put it on a single foil to show the results. And indeed, we can see that before with VP20, for the 2-minute trace period, I did around 14,000 synchronous reads. And following the reallocation using the methodology I discussed, that reduced that down to 6,000. And it's those synchronous reads that are on the path length of the transactions. And we saw that in the transaction response time as well on the previous foil. I should have pointed that out. So, yes, I've achieved the results I wanted. So what process did we actually go through here? Well, the first step, as I indicated before, is to run the trace, which is a either can be submitted as a batch job, or you can go through some online, run it from some online panels. And in here, we have to give obvious things like the DB2 subsystem we're going to be tracing, which sort of report we want, which was standard or short, what level of detail we want, which determines how much trace data we get. All that also determines what sort of reporting we can do. And we need for simulation, in fact, we need detail. We can give a start time so we can put the job in and have a deferred start time if we want. We can control the duration, set a maximum on the number of records. I think for this 2-minute trace, I collected about 600,000 records through IFI. Some control of the buffer size for IFI. And then the final control we have there is, and I put in an example there of 1510, although I didn't use it for this particular trace, which is trace for 15 seconds every 10 minutes. And that's quite useful if you want to do object placement and gather information about all objects, not just those that happen to be accessed during your 10-minute trace, continuous tracing. So the process can be used in two ways. One, for gathering data across the day, so we pick up information about all objects. And secondly, for a continuous trace in order to be able to do simulation. So if you'd like to move on to slide 47, this is the input panel. I've cut it down a little bit, but essentially this is the input panel for the rules on data set placement, object placement, and very simple rule specification. I can see on the left, you can see on the left-hand side the name of the particular buffer pool. Minus 50 is just shorthand for 0 to 50% sequential access. So any object with 0 to 50% sequential access is random access. Any object with 50 minus, that is just shorthand for 50 to 100% sequential access, falls into the second group, into buffer pool 19. And small objects, and I've got a slightly different size just to illustrate how you can control by size, indexes and data, a slightly different size threshold for small objects. So those are the rules. What comes out of that is a set of alters that you can then run, alter for the buffer pools and alters for the objects. Now, obviously, you don't do that at any time, because altering the buffer pool for an object, the object has to be stopped and restarted. So it's an intrusive process, so it's something you do not very frequently, maybe during a weekend maintenance slot when you can reallocate objects between pools and resize the pools. So here you can see that before we had all objects in VP20 with a VP size of 1,000, and I took the default to the remaining parameters. So those are the exact, that's what you get if you just fire up a buffer pool and do nothing. Following the recommendations from the object placement process, VP17 I sized at 80 to control, to hold rather I should say, the small objects and no more. 18 and 19, and this is I think fairly typical of sizing between random sequential. In my experience, we tend to see that those pools that are for index use or for random access tend to be sized quite a lot larger, a ratio of maybe 2-1 of pools that are allocated for data access, on the basis that data, once it's sequentially accessed, probably won't be accessed again in a short interval of time. Notice that I've chosen FIFO for the pool that's pinned. You want to be sure that there's no I/O into that pool at all, and indeed, going back a number of foils, you could have seen that there was no I/O into VP17 at all for the interval traced. And I've also followed the recommendations in terms of VP7T and for the other objects. Now, because this was a version 8 system, I've also chosen to take the page fix option, which we would recommend for most for all pools in version 8, to use the page fix option. So moving on again, finally, having, so that was the success of the page allocation process, and then finally is to run the simulation process, which produces a lot more information than this, but this is just a subset of the information, which shows the trade-off between the number of pages allocated and the application hit ratio. And as you can see in this particular report, you can also see the consequence of separate buffer pools versus the combined pool. And this is using simulation, using get page input, and so it's a very precise measurement. And we can see that around the 2,000-3,000 page mark, the payback for additional storage is very small, if at all. So this gives you what point on the curve do you want to be. You can now have a sensible discussion with the systems programming people about how much storage they can afford to allocate to DB2. So in summary then, we've shown how by using the tool we can reallocate objects between pools, resize the pools, and we can understand the relationship between hit ratio, the success of the pool in avoiding these synchronous IOs, and the size of the pool. And one final thought is, it would be a very simple extension to take the data from the DB2 tables that we load up with from the trace data, and use that to generate the alters directly, so that you could then automate the whole process. So as new objects arrive into your environments, you can understand their access profile and then allocate them to pools on a pretty much automated process. So with that, I'd like to hand back to Diane McCollum so we can open up for questions, and thank you for your time.
Thank you, everybody, for staying with us. I think it was a subject that had lots of important information that we wanted to share with you. So, Justin, at this time, we'd like to open it up for Q&As.
Thank you, Ms. McCollum. The question and answer session will be conducted electronically. If you would like to ask a question, please do so by pressing the star key followed by the digit 1 on your touchtone telephone. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. We will proceed in the order that you signal us, and we'll take as many questions as time permits. Once again, please press star 1 on your touchtone telephone to ask a question, and we'll pause for just a moment to give everyone an opportunity to signal for questions. And our first question comes from Dale Budd with Verizon Data Service. Mr. Budd, please go ahead.
Yes, I have a question about the XE and when you're running the quote-unquote old OmegaMon system. The traces, how are they handled? Is the new XE world going to be able to use the current DB2 traces, or are they going to have their own set like PE does today?
Well, as much as possible, what you're going to see is a common collection approach, wherein basically there's going to be an interplay, if you will, between what we call the collector address space, as you refer to it as, and which is, you know, the origin of the classic interface, and then the new XE address space, which is the agent, and where possible, it's going to pull it from there. So the key is to not have, you know, much of any redundancy. Now, over time, you know, the architecture will evolve, but, you know, typically what you're going to see is that type of approach now.
Okay, so would that be including, like, if you have an XE not quite this, where it's a combined version, is the same thing going to happen today, where it will be a joint rather than an individual? And is that settable so you can make sure, because we're having that problem right now.
With what, you're having a problem with redundant traces and things
yes.
like that?
PE and OmegaMon, DB2.
Okay. Now, relative to the PE portion of the PE server, if you will, I think you will see some potentially redundant tracing there. I'll defer that one to, like, Ernie, perhaps. Ernie, what's your understanding of how if you enable the PE portion within the classic collector? That'll be redundant or additional tracing, will it not?
Ed, I think if, and again, I'm at SVL. We're in the middle of writing a red book on this converged product, and when you go through the ICAT customization, which is what you used to refer to as KiCat, you do specify a standard set of traces that that are run. And my understanding is it's just one set. So what you would see is, if I'm not mistaken, accounting 1, 2, 3, 7, and 8, and then statistics class 30 get started by default. And as Ed mentioned, too, there's certainly some instrumentation that you're seeing on the OmegaMon side that either for performance purposes or it might even be instrumentation that's not currently externalized through the IFI that we'll continue to scan control blocks for that. I think I'll probably do a little investigation just to verify that we aren't specifying redundant traces, but I believe we're only going to be starting one set of traces.
And if I would need to open a problem, who do I open it to Tivoli or DB2?
That's an interesting question, and right now, and we're actually going to be addressing that in the Red Book as well. You would open it to DB2 if you hold on just a second, and I can actually give you the queue that you would open it into. And then once that's been opened, then there will probably be a quick determination as to whether or not it would be a you know, for example, if it was an issue with the Tivoli portal server component, for example, that's code that is maintained by the Tivoli folks.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still. Let me scan through my emails while we continue to take other questions. And when I find the queue, I'll let everybody on the call know how to open those problems.
Okay. Thank you.
And our next question comes from Wendy Davis with OPERS. Please go ahead.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay. This is for Ed. Ed, good morning. This is Venkat from OPERS.
Hello.
I got a question on this Tivoli Enterprise Portal. Is it comes with this a new product?
The question is Tivoli Enterprise Portal a new product? Is that what you asked?
No, is it... That the dashboard software, it comes with a new product?
Oh, the dashboard. Okay, the dashboard is a separately chargeable item. Think of it this way. When you get OmegaMon XE for DB2, the new 3.0 version, support for the portal interface is included in that you do have the ability to run the GUI portal portion of the tool and use it. But if you want to then in turn connect it to the bigger enterprise-wide view that includes Kix and IMS and ZOS, etc., that implies dashboard enablement, and that dashboard enablement is a separate chargeable item.
Okay. I got another question, follow-up with that one. During the filtering of the thread, do we have ability to drill down the thread?
The ability to do what to a thread, I'm sorry?
Drill down. Okay. Once I filter the thread, can I drill down to the thread for the details in detail?
Think of it this way. Any kind of command capability that you have from the portal, say I'm looking at the thread view, and I showed the example there of killing a thread. But this you could issue really any kind of valid console command from that portal view off of the take action. I happen to just choose the kill there as a simple pre-canned scenario, but that you could have a command that would take the form of any kind of a valid console command.
No, I'm talking about, I would like to get some more details about that problematic thread. Like, so I can drill down. I can open the...
Drill down. I'm sorry. Okay, yes. One of the things that's in the tool that I didn't really go into because of time constraints was there are drill downs, and if you look at some of the screens that I went through, you'll see like a little blue icon on the left portion of a lot of the thread lines, etc. And that blue icon indicates the ability to do drill downs, or what we refer to in Omegamon parlance as a link. So in other words, you can link from one display to another and get what amounts to drill downs for additional detail. Now, there's a set of drill downs that are provided out of the box, but you can add additional ones using what we call the link wizard, and it gives you the ability to customize drill down navigation really in any way you need to. It's very flexible.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
And we have a question from Carol Shireta with Daimler Chrysler. Please go ahead.
Yes. We have currently the Candle Explain product, the old Candle Explain product, and I believe it's been replaced with the SQLPA. We're still at version 7 of DB2 because we are really, working with trying to migrate to the SQLPA. And, like with the display screens, they're very different from the Candle Explain, and Candle Explain seems to summarize it more. I'm wondering, is there going to be some sort of a teleconference or something like similar to this one for the Candle Explain product, or are there so few customers that that they wouldn't be doing that, or there doesn't seem to be some sort of a migration thing of migrating from the Candle Explain to the SQLPA other than here's SQLPA,
right.
Figure it out yourself.
This is Diane McCollum.
Okay.
If I could have you send me a note.
Okay.
I'll get in touch with you, and we'll make a determination if we have a generalized session and or we do a one-off with you.
And Carol, this is Ernie Mansell. Actually, Ed Woods was involved last year. We had a Redbook residency where we talked about the different legacy database management products from Candle and the IBM equivalents, and I believe they covered within that Red Book the DB Explain to SQLPA migration. Am I not correct, Ed?
Yes, Ernie, you are not correct.
You didn't cover it in there.
We didn't cover Explain because at that point the path was unclear. We covered the Candle Workbench, Compare, Quick Change, Smooth. Unfortunately, Explain did not get covered in that Red Book because I was actually, just as you were talking, I was reaching for my copy of that Red Book. The Red Book, by the way, is SB24-6685 and came out probably 9 months or so ago. Explain was not covered because at that point the direction wasn't clear.
And there's also, there was an earlier Red Book covering three of the IBM performance solutions, performance monitor, Query Monitor and SQL PA. So I could point you to that red book as maybe a place to start. One other comment about SQL PA, not delivered at GA, but plans are to deliver this through the maintenance stream. We will be providing a launch and context support from the VTAM Classic to SQL PA.
Okay, but that's about where we are, and, you know, like, this is, it's a lot of, you know, like, it's a good deal of research, and, you know, we'll try that, you know, in the meantime, we're still on 7.
Right.
If we could move on, Carol,
okay,
can you send
me sure, a note? Sure.
Absolutely, we'll follow up on this.
Just send it, Diane McCollum, usibm.com.
You got it.
Okay, and is that M-C-C-U-L-U-M?
C-A-L-L-U-M.
C-A-L-L-U-M.
Yep. Well, actually, you can send it to D-M-C-C-A-L-L-U at us.ibm.com.
Okay, D-M-C-C-A-L-L-U
at us.ibm.com.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Justin, can we go on?
Yes, our next question comes from Janet Howie with Nationwide Insurance. Please go ahead.
Hello. Concerning the buffer pool analyzer, it produces DB2 tables with historical information. Is there a capability of reporting on those DB2 tables then, or is that something that you would do on your own?
Hello, this is Mike Bracey. That is something you do on your own.
Okay.
Using whatever query tool you had, like QMF.
Okay.
Or such like.
Okay, thank you.
We don't give you a set of pre-canned queries, but they're very simple tables to use.
Okay, thank you. And then one other quick question. Is there going to be a general performance manual that will come out with the tool? Because right now, DB2PM has a nice performance, general performance manual that you didn't get unless you were a PM customer. Will that be automatically provided with the Megamon tool? Maybe I'm misunderstanding something, but it seemed like that we didn't automatically have access to the DB2PM manual before.
So when you go to the data management tools portal, and I think Diane might be able to give you that URL in a minute, there'll be a library selection, and from there you'll see a bookshelf with both the, because again, even though the products are converged, we're going to have some manuals that represent a discussion about the converged architecture. So for example, there's going to be a getting started manual, which has discussions of both the configuration and customization guide. It's going to be a combination of what we had in the Candle side plus the install and customization manual for the performance expert. And then there are going to be manuals, you know, specific to each set of functionality. So most of the manuals that you see today with the performance monitor bookshelf will still be available. And you should be able to get hold of all of those from that bookshelf. Now, in terms of
Ernie, the website, just for your information, is ibm.com/software/data/db2ims tools. Now, if you follow library from there, you'll get a page where you can download any IBM tools manual.
Okay, great. And so there will be a general performance manual that does.
Well, I'm not quite sure I remember that particular manual. I know that there's for a number of the manuals, there are, you know, very detailed use case discussions. Obviously, for the performance expert Omegamon Red Book, we're going to try to do a number of use case scenarios as part of the Red Book residency and as well. And then I could also direct you to the DB2 administration guide, because within the performance section of the administration guide, there are a number of performance topics that are discussed that correlate directly to specific DB2 PM reports, for example, that would help you measure and then isolate specific performance problems.
Okay, thank you.
And our next question comes from Cesar Coco with Midco Health Solutions. Please go ahead.
Yes, hi, thank you. Quick question regarding the case study. In a situation that if I'm running in a 6% environment and data sharing, when analyzing the performing similar study, should I take in consideration the coupling facility related buffer pools? And I'm not expecting a detailed analysis of the whole explanation. I just want to make sure that when I do this analysis locally in a given DB2 subsystem, I should consider the coupling facility group buffer pools associated or related with them. Thanks for your time.
Yes, hello, thank you. At the moment, at this point, the answer is yes, of course you should, because if you alter your local buffer pools, you would need in a data sharing environment to consider the knock-on consequences for your group buffer pools in a data sharing environment. At this point in time, we have no support with buffer pool analyzer for group buffer pools. It is high on our list of requirements. So it is a known requirement, and one that we're actively looking at is support for group buffer pools. But in today's product, I can't offer you that, but it's something, yes, you should go back to the data sharing implementation guide that comes with DB2 and go through the formula in there again in terms of resizing your group buffer pools if you did a serious resize to your local pools, because there will be knock-on consequences.
Thank you very much. Your presentation was good. I like it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
And our next question comes from Luann Moraes with the FBI. Please go ahead.
Yes, I had a question about, it's for Ed Woods. Page 19, you talked about the threat overview, and on page 39, you talked about object analysis. And I wondered if when you drilled down on a thread, if one of the things you could see was objects used by a thread, as opposed to looking at individual objects and seeing what threads they're using?
Yes. If you're in the 3270 portion of the tool and you're looking, say, for example, at thread summary, and then you drill into thread detail, there will be an object subcommand off of the thread detail view in 3270, wherein you will be able to see object information related to the thread. Now, that's assuming that you do have the object analysis collector activated and running at that time. Some places run object analysis all the time. Other places start and stop it as needed, so different places do handle it differently. But assuming that you do have object analysis running and you're in 3270, we'll have that drill down.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And our next question comes from Robert DiFilippo with Sony. Please go ahead.
Yes, hi, how are you? My understanding is that from a historical reporting perspective, that the Converge product will use more of the former DB2PM/PE mechanisms. Is that correct? That's my first question.
That is correct, yes. Think of it this way. You have near-term history,
right,
and then you have your what I would call your traditional reporting. Near-term
right.
history is the near-term historical function that's been in a Megamon for many years. And
right.
that will continue on as before.
And only visible from the 3270 interface?
As of right now, yes, 3270
okay.
interface. Now, down the road, you know, things that I mentioned before were, and it's right now you have to go to 3270, more and more of this over time will end up in Portal. But as the tool sits right now, it's 3270 viewable feature.
As well as things like object analysis?
Correct.
Okay.
That being said, though, now if we're talking data sharing,
right.
we have a group object analysis function, which is a portal-based capability which summarizes the object analysis across the data sharing group.
Okay.
But
yeah.
if I'm talking single image, it's 3270.
Right. Now, one thing we use is the, what I guess used to be called, the, or may still be called, the PM performance database to hold trace information,
right,
statistics for a long period of time, and then
right,
we've customized queries and things like that to report off that.
Mm-hmm.
How, if at all, is that integrated into the GUI, the new GUI interface for XE?
It's not integrated as of yet.
Okay, are those phases coming, or?
That's the future.
Yeah, so if the question is, are we going to provide a mechanism for you to continue to migrate that data or to continue to populate that performance database, mm-hmm, the Candle performance database, right now the answer is no.
I thought you were talking about the PM one. Or
yeah, I'm talking about the PM one.
Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize.
Because up to now, you're right. It when the former XE product, it had its own performance database. Is the future direction to use the, for instance, the PM performance database and have it integrated with your GUI interfaces?
Right. So that is the direction. In the presentation where we talked about the architecture,
right,
you see that we have some plans, the next version of the Converge product, to eliminate the fat client. Now, there's been some discussion because part of that functionality that fat client is used for is actually to control the performance warehouse processes. So the lab is right now trying to gauge whether they would try to move all of that functionality into the portal user interface, or maybe the fat client survives, but not for the purposes of online monitoring, but simply for the purposes of warehouse management. One other thing is that if you have an existing performance monitor, performance expert environment, and you have populated performance information into the performance warehouse, you will be able to use that information, and the data in the performance warehouse will remain intact as you lay the Converge product over the top of it.
Is the performance warehouse and the PM performance database two different sets of DB2 tables?
Absolutely.
They are. Okay.
And also, one of the things that we're going to be trying to discuss in the Red Book is a section that will clarify and possibly provide some use case scenarios as to when would be appropriate uses for the warehouse and what might be more appropriate for the performance database.
Yeah, that would definitely be helpful.
Okay.
And as of now, neither one of these have visibility from the XE GUI, the first phase of this rollout. Am I correct in understanding that?
So by XE GUI, if you're talking about the portal?
The portal, yes, the Devily Enterprise portal.
That is correct.
But there are plans to possibly integrate that in the future?
Possibly. It depends on whether they decide to put it in the portal or to somehow change the existing fat client to maybe continue to use some of that functionality in there. As I said, they're still
fat
wrestling
client being
with that.
The former PE fat client, is that what you're
yes.
referring to?
Yes.
Okay.
So I guess the safest thing to say is that there's more to come on this, it'll become clearer as the next version takes shape.
From my standpoint, and it's just only my standpoint, it would be helpful if there was one front end GUI that had access to all these things, both real time and historical type information.
Absolutely.
As opposed to having multiples.
That's where we want to go. Our first step was to integrate the foundation, if you will, and then we progress from there.
Okay, thank you very much.
Sure, thank you.
And we'll take our next question from Bob Giandron with USDA. Mr. Giandron, please go ahead.
Hi, thank you. Currently I install a performance monitor, and it's an easy standalone product to install. Is the performance monitor with the Megamind going to be the same? Is it going to be standalone, or we're going to have to install all of a Megamind 3.1 to get this one piece?
When you install the Megamind PE 3.1.0, it comes as a single install tape with all the necessary FMIDs, if you're into SMPE and libraries and whatever, in there. Now, you could install it as a standalone install and not commingle it with other Megamonds. Or you could install it into the Megamond CSI zones. It's up to you. I see different places do it differently. Now,
okay.
Inside of that SMP environment, there will be some FMIDs that we refer to in the Megamont speak as common code components.
Right.
Now, that's just because you have to have certain code that supports the address spaces and whatnot. But again, it's purely up to you in terms of how you want to lay it out, separate, together. I have customers that do it either way.
Okay. We have a Megamont 3.0 right now. Could I just get the performance monitor PE part?
Right. Here's what would happen is, so you already have a Megamont DB2 V300 out there.
Correct.
You'll get a brand new shiny tape that says V310.
Okay.
And in there, what it will do is it will kick out the old FMIDs, bring in new FMIDs, and it would be just the same receive, apply, accept processing as before, and then the ICAT installer will look very similar to what you went through with the prior release, but you will see additional options, the primary function of which will be to provide the ability to do additional customization for things like the PE server pieces that now run within the Omegamon collector, or what we call the Omegamon server address space.
Okay.
So, but other than that, if you're already familiar with the install, it's not going to be that much different.
Right. One additional comment I would make is, and Ed, correct me if I'm wrong here, but the old legacy Megamon customers that were running KiCat, the KiCat process also had a driver to dialogue to do the SMPE work.
Right.
We've taken that out of ICAT.
That's correct.
So ICAT really would you presuppose that you had already done the traditional SMPE work through either batch jobs or the dialogue.
Right.
One other point of concern, or I guess note for the existing customer that's wanting to install this over an existing predecessor Omegamon product, is that you do need to pull the PSP bucket for the ICAT FMID, because we do have some special, I guess the word, lack of better terms, instructions to ensure that you don't inadvertently regress a couple of the old functions in your global zone. So I do encourage you to pull current PSP buckets specifically for the ICAT.
Yeah. Basically what's happening now is the ICAT installer is going through a traditional SMPE maintenance process, as opposed to the way it was done in the old Candle days, where basically you would just do an IEP copy of the installer off your latest maintenance tape. But like what Ernie says, just be sure you pull the latest thing down in terms of maintenance. And you'll see FMIDs in the SMPE install specific to KiCat. It'll be like KCI kind of FMIDs or something like that. And that will address what you need. Just be sure you're pulling down the latest, greatest.
And we are also expecting any day now, the lab has put together a very nice white paper with a detailed step-by-step scenario of how a customer, more of interest probably to the performance monitor, performance expert customer, how they would go through an ICAT installation. And I would expect that we'll probably see that published on the data management website probably in the next couple of weeks.
That'd be a good thing. All right, thank you.
Thank you.
And we'd like to remind everyone that if you do have a question, please press *1 on your touch-tone phone. And we'll take our next question from Ari Brendenson from DTCC. Please go ahead.
Hello. My question is about two things. First of all, we're going to be brand new customers of the both Omegamon and DB2 PM. We've had other companies' products in before. Will we get everything that with this one tape that people, because we keep talking about things that they had, this bad client that they had with the old version of PE or PM, will we get all of that with the new with this new tape that we get?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Now since you're a new customer, you may want to, as you start using the product, keep in mind the evolutionary plan that we have in place. So although you would certainly have the ISPF PE client and the FAT client from PE, we know that eventually we're going to functionally stabilize and remove those components. So you would probably be better served to focus on learning and implementing your best practices using the VTAM Classic and the portal-based technology if you're wanting a GUI user front end. But certainly everything that you've seen today will be available to you.
Thank you. One more question, and the reason we started going down this path is to monitor DB2 Connect. And can you tell me how detailed can you drill down, you know, starting with the DB2 Connect server, you can see DB2 Connect threads.
Right.
Do you get as drilled down as kind of a statement, statements that were DB2?
Yeah. You'll see statement level information. You'll see text. You'll see SQL counts. You'll see all that kind of stuff. I didn't show all the different, you know, details in there, but yeah, you'll have that.
You can get as far down as that. Okay. And I guess we're going to be new to DB2 Connect as well. So I mean, do you get a sense of like stale connection kind of monitoring from that end, or is that really more from a WebSphere monitoring thing that you need?
Stale connection, meaning you have a thread that's just kind of hung and sitting out there.
Yeah, or that the DB2 portion of it went away, but the WebSphere thinks he still has a connection or something like that.
So WebSphere still thinks it's active, but it's gone bye-bye from a DB2 perspective.
Right.
Yeah, in that kind of scenario, that's where you would probably want to go the DE route, and you could maybe even pull in something from the correlating OmegaMon WebSphere monitoring piece, which is technically what we call ITCAM, and pull it in that way. And you could probably build a correlated alert that would look at things from both sides.
ITCAM is the thing that monitors WebSphere? Is that what
you're saying? Yeah, it's IT composite application monitoring, and it plugs into the Tivoli Enterprise Portal monitoring infrastructure. And so the same visibility in terms of workspaces, policies, situations, alerts, all that stuff, it's all the same, plugs into the same backbone infrastructure, and you can create what's called correlated alerts that basically let you look at both sides of the equation and then make a determination. Or you could even have a single physical screen if you just want to eyeball it and look at it that way and see both sides.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
Before we get away, I wanted to come back and address a question that Dale raised earlier as far as how to open problems. So the component ID, the retained component ID that you would open your problem under is 5655OPE00, and this is release 310, and the queue name, for those of you that can use IBM Link and open the problem electronically, is DB2GER,136. Entering those two will certainly route you to the correct queue, at least for the initial problem determination process.
And we have a question from Cesar Coco with Medco Health Solutions. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you very much. Going back to the DB2 Connect Monitoring Classic interface, I just wanted to double check if we have a lot of distributed DB2 requests coming into our system via DDF, meaning remote clients requests, issuing connect calls, and these kind of things. Does the Classic interface will be able to monitor and report on this incoming request landing via DDF in a given DB2 subsystem and clear reporting also, I mean?
Yes. Yes, all that's in there.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
And our next question comes from Stefan Horn with British Energy. Please go ahead.
Hello. When you drill down and look at the SQL and you see the SQL statement, will you be able to pick out the host variables?
The host variable contents, when you're looking at, say, for example, we're looking at a thread real time, we see the SQL text in OmegaMon 3270.
Yep.
What you're going to see is the SQL text, and you'll see the placeholders. You won't see the variable contents.
You can't pick out the variables?
No.
Okay, thank you.
A commonly requested enhancement. Or do you know anything about
the I can say that we've extended one of the fairly recent enhancements to the reporting component. Is that I can now, and I believe this is the SQL activity trace, report, I can now elect to collect host variables from the batch component.
Right.
If collecting host variable information is important to you, quite frankly, we have another product, not that we're trying to sell you stuff, but I'm going to go ahead and make the pitch, called the DB2 Query Monitor, and that actually is focused on collecting performance information from an SQL statement perspective, and we have capabilities within that product to capture host variable information.
Okay, thank you.
And at this time, Ms. McCallum, there are no further questions. I'll turn it back over to you for any additional closing comments.
Thank you very much. Thank you, everyone, for taking time out of your busy schedules to attend DB2 Performance, Making the End Run Successful. A special thanks goes out to Ernie Mansell, Ed Woods, and Mike Bracey, all from IBM, for being our speakers today. If you should have any questions, please do not hesitate to contact me, and I will be glad to put you in touch with the DB2 Tool Sales or Technical Sales Specialist. Our next DB2 Tools presentation will be on March 7th, entitled Two of IBM's Best Kept Secrets, DB2 Data Access Tools for Use from the Web or. Goodbye, and have a great day.
And that does conclude our presentation for today. We thank you for your participation. Have a good day.